Welcome to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, the podcast where we uncover the secrets of CEOs, entrepreneurs, and visionaries who've used public speaking to skyrocket their businesses and their bottom line. Get ready for captivating stories, valuable insights, and practical wisdom from the trailblazers who've mastered the art of the stage. I'm your host, Kelly O'Hara, and I'm thrilled to bring you their experiences and expertise directly to you. Let's get started. Happens when you mix a TEDx speaker, a subconscious success strategist, a glitter-slinging entrepreneur, and a woman who stared down trauma, burned the rule book, and built her own damn crown. You get a walking masterclass in radical reinvention. Today on the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, we're not just talking about public speaking. We're talking about owning your story so boldly that your voice becomes a magnet for growth, credibility, and unapologetic power. This is the episode for anyone who's tired of shouting into the void, doing visibility that doesn't convert, and burning out trying to prove they're enough. Because today's guest, she's done all of that and turned it into rocket fuel. Kimberly Spencer, she's not your average coach, and she sure as heck isn't here to play small. She's the founder of Crown Yourself, her wildly successful podcast, CEO of Communication Queens, a TEDx speaker, best-selling author of Make Every Podcast Want You, and a five-time entrepreneur who's built empires, broken cycles, and helped high achievers rewrite the self-sabotaging scripts holding them back. She scaled businesses while barefoot and pregnant, literally, healed trauma while doubling profits, and turned podcast guesting into a high-converting visibility machine that doesn't require paid ads, big audiences, or burnout. Kimberly's the queen of helping entrepreneurs turn their voice into their most profitable asset. And if you think storytelling is fluff or that visibility is just about going viral, you're about to get a serious upgrade. From selling glitter water at 5 years old to coaching NASA employees and making TEDx audiences lean in and tear up, Kimberly's story is proof that your mess really can become your message if you're brave enough to claim it. So let's dive into visibility that actually moves the needle, storytelling that sells, and how to build a body, brand, and business that rules on your terms. Kimberly, welcome to the show.
Kelly, what an intro. I have listened to your podcast and I was like, you and I were talking offline. I was like, you set your guests up well. I'm like, damn, you did your research. You even found that I had a client who worked at NASA.
I'm telling you, you are an interesting person to research. I love what you've done. And I think you are so perfectly set up to serve our audience some incredible information that's going to change the game for them. So let's get with it. If you've listened to this show before, I love the journey. I love finding out who somebody is. And you can always tell that when they tell their story and you know about story. You've been a screenwriter, a Pilates instructor, a beauty queen, a business owner, and you're now a powerhouse coach. Looking back, what was the spark that set all that in motion?
Storytelling has always been the through line that connects my very varied career of starting out. I've always been fascinated by stories and stories that I never wanted to be a part of the stories or like the stories that were simple for women. Like you lose a shoe or you get kissed by a prince and suddenly everything magically changes. I always loved the stories where there was transformation involved, where there had to be an internal and external circumstantial environmental change that alchemized the character. And that was manifested early on in my childhood. I always say, like, my growing up with my dad, who was an alcoholic and an addict for most of my life, he really was the epitome of seeing this dichotomy that I have this ability to see someone's highest and best potential of what they say they want to achieve. And then I see their behavior of how they're actually operating. And I think that's what makes me a very good coach. It makes me a very good storyteller because I can see the through line if you just choose to follow the story. But sometimes we get stuck, and myself included, like we get stuck in our own internal stories of I'm not good enough, or I'm not worthy, or who am I, or all of those small stories that keep us stuck in our circumstances versus allowing us to transcend into that sovereign, that leader, that queen version archetype that we have the possibility of becoming.
So true. And I love it. The storytelling side of it, people don't realize how critical that is. You've said that stories, they tell ourselves, they shape our entire reality. What was the story you used to believe about yourself? And what was the moment that you decided to rewrite it?
We would need a lot longer podcast to go on. All of the stories that I've rewritten and I'm still rewriting. Just today, I was getting some blood work for my three-year-old. And I was like, oh my gosh, I remember when I would hand over the credit card and I would be like paralyzed. Is it gonna go through? So I've rewritten money stories, body image stories, relationship stories, business stories, like all of those stories, like every single thing that is in your life right now is a product of your story. And the biggest story that I had to rewrite was the story that I was broken, damaged, and a victim. And that came from years of experience growing up with an alcoholic and an addict for a father who was, when he was sober, he was amazing. He was like top dad, amazing dad, had the best money mindset, taught me so much about entrepreneurship because he was incredibly high functioning as an entrepreneur. And he was the people person, and nobody knew behind the closed door that he was an alcoholic. Like people, nobody would have assumed. And it was really interesting being able, once I removed myself from the environment of my childhood home, and I started my first business, which was as a freelance Pilates instructor, which was to support myself in screenwriting as I pursued my career in Hollywood at the age of 19, that removal of that myself from the environment allowed me to start to question the stories that I had that had caused me to face a 10-year battle with bulimia. And it was through rewriting my story about my body and really looking not only from a mindset perspective, but also from a somatic perspective, because the body keeps the score. When we look at from the somatic perspective as well, and you utilize breath work and fitness and movement to move our stories through us, when we change the body, we change the mind, and we can change what's possible for our stories. And so I started out not knowing that I was rewriting people's stories as a Pilates instructor, but people would come to me and they would have postpartum issues or back issues. And as I would train the body, I would start to see them feel more confident. I would start to see them feel happier in their skin. I would start to see them not have pain anymore. And suddenly they went from an identity that they used to hold on to of I'm always going to have this tummy, or I'm like, this is how I think my body is. So, oh my gosh, my body can move and it's live and it feels good to be in my skin, which is the whole reason why I started teaching Pilates anyways, because it was a catalyst for healing with my bulimia journey. That when I started to see that there is this power in not only the body, but in the minds, and how they're intimately connected with the stories that we're telling ourselves. And then not only that, but being a screenwriter, seeing how a film that I wrote, a little indie motocross movie starring Danny Trejo called Bro, I co-wrote it with the director, Nick Parada, and this film transforms three people's lives just from the story alone. And I was like, the stories are powerful that we share. But we have to understand, especially when I work with a lot of really amazing, smart people, like that sometimes we want to get into the strategy and we want to get into the information and we want to get into sharing all that we know. But if we don't share the emotional connection of story to it, then we actually lose the audience, because as humans, we are biologically wired for story. That is how we have evolved as a species, is through connection to story and through emotional connection. When you can get that emotional connection, then it opens the gateway for people to absorb the information. And I always give the example of, do you remember like 10th grade biology class? I don't. But had you told me in 10th grade biology class, when I was studying the functionality of the body that and having to memorize all these muscles, that if you had just engaged the rhomboids in your back, that it would send signals to your brain by just adjusting your posture, that you were more confident and more powerful and that you weren't so fear-based and mired in doubt. Oh my gosh, that would have changed the game for me as a 16-year-old struggling with body image issues and confidence. Like, I would have suddenly had a why behind it. Story gives us the why. And when we can connect with that why, like Simon Sinek says, start with the why. When we can connect with that why, that's what opens the doors for other people to connect with our message. And then eventually our strategies, our systems, our frameworks.
It's interesting that you talk about that too, is when I think about it's such a great lead in as think about 10th grade biology. If you think about what if that information that you just shared had been available then?
Oh my gosh.
How it would have not only changed your own life, but the people around you that you could have helped with that information. Instead, you were dissecting frogs and doing some things. And I actually loved biology class and absolutely loved the teacher I had, but it made you clicked me, that story clicked me into history. And I had nuns teaching history. Are you kidding me? And let me tell you, it wasn't an exciting story at all. There's nothing exciting about it. It was facts and figures and dates, and it was not told. Imagine if story had been introduced to that. I think kids today have such an advantage with all the wonderful visuals, the wonderful content that's out there to really illustrate the point. But you're so right. You're so right. I love hearing this. So stories are critical. You also have a great deal of focus on decisions. And that's something that I too, once a decision is made, it changes your life. But it sure takes people a long time to make that decision. And I've heard you say most of our stories, we've decided on the least amount of consciousness and awareness. And then we recreate it into our lives. And it behooves us to take some time and really focus on what we're deciding on, why we're deciding on it. Because if you can get that far, you could get to actually making the decision that will make that next step for you. What is your take on that?
A decision is, it's a belief. It's a belief system. It's a belief in a story. So if you made the decision based on a few bad dates, oh, I always attract the wrong men, then you're basing off of a limited amount of information. And then that's what you're going to attract into your reality because you've made the decision, you've adopted the belief system that you always choose the wrong men and that there's just no good men in the world. And thus, that's what you're going to start to see. It's if I said, okay, we'll make the decision to see the color red, you're only going to see the color red. So our subconscious minds are wired to be the seekers. So we have to look at what are the decisions that we're unconsciously making that about our circumstances, about visibility, about our businesses, about our brands, about money, about our relationships. What are all these decisions that we've made? And how can we consciously say, oh, I don't like that decision because it's producing results that I don't really like. So I have a very simple principle that I live by of that which is conscious manifests happily and that which is unconscious manifests unhappily. And when I see something unhappily manifest in my circumstances, I think immediately, and I've conditioned myself to think this way, where was the decision? What was the decision that I made that created this circumstance? That thus, now I get to go in and look at where's the story that I'm telling myself on repeat. Is it a story of lack? Is it a story of scarcity? Is it a story of disempowerment? Is it a story of not enoughness? Where is that story? Let's uproot that story, change the story.
Oh, I love this. I've got to tell you, I'm going to share something that I have not shared with anybody else, never on air, but I'm going to share it because you brought up dating and it's such, I think it's a really good dovetail on this. So just like you said, you can start to create an experience where you think all men are bad or I always attract the wrong guy. I didn't actually have that belief, but I remember that I had been dating one guy and I had gotten divorced. I started dating someone and then I realized, oh no, this isn't working for me. And I literally was sitting at the table with this heavy hitter guy who was making his play. And I remember thinking in the middle of the dinner, oh no, I've already done you. I'm not doing this again. I've already been down this road before. So I went home and I said, okay, I'm finished and I'm going to reset this stage. And I wrote a list. I wrote a list. It can be as long as you want it to be. But for me, it was about 25 things. And I went, all right, I'm not really looking to date right now. But if I was, what would that person look like? And not what they would look like. What would they be like? Who would they be? And I literally wrote out like 25 things. And it's got to be very specific, right? It's very specific. As specific as you needed to be. If they're sexually compatible with you, if they love being home, or they love kids, dogs, whatever. Create this whole list. And then I put it away. I said, what are the top five things that are absolutely non-negotiable? And the minute I made that decision, I felt completely at rest. Let it go. Didn't think about it. 2 weeks later, 2, 3 weeks later, I wasn't even thinking about it. I wasn't even dating at the time. I got a phone call from someone I'd known back in high school who wanted to go to dinner. Went to dinner. Everything on the list he hit, and I'm married to him. But I always attribute it to I'd made that list that was very specific, so anybody else who showed up without it wasn't going to be of interest. I'd already decided. So that decision-making process is so powerful because you literally attract what it is that you've decided upon. So if you can decide upon the positive of the things you're looking for, or you can decide upon the things you will not tolerate, that guy will walk through the door too again. You'll be sitting at dinner with him and catch yourself.
I love that story, Kelly. I can't tell you how many clients I have given that exercise to and friends that have done that have had the exact same results. I did that when I was 16 years old. I made a list. I had a list of 49 things, and two were very clearly from a 16-year-old perspective, so they were obsolete. But my husband hit 48 out of 49. And I really should have looked at that list more often when I was dating.
If I could go back, I might have added a couple of things. But the truth is, he hit the list at the time and luckily still does in almost everything. So it all works out. It works with everything. It works with your job. You could hate the job you're in. But before you jump to something else, decide, make yourself a list of all the things that are really important to you that you want, not what you don't want. What do you want? What does it feel like to be in that job? How do you feel about yourself, and how do people feel about you? And write that list out. And once you do, then knock off the 3 to 5 that are non-negotiable. I did this with buying a house. I was buying a house, right? Hot market. It was a crazy market. 11 houses. I had the wrong agent. I was like, get out. I will negotiate my own deals after this. So I wrote a list out and I handed it to my husband. And I'll tell you one little thing. I hand it to my husband. I go, look, I've made out this list for the next house. Would you take a look at it? See if you have any objections at all. And then tell me, is there anything you want? And he said, this looks great. I'd like fruit trees and a corner lot. And immediately I thought, oh, great. You just chopped down a whole lot of possibilities with a corner lot. Lo and behold, I got all of it. I got all of it. And I didn't even have to look. It came to me in the strangest of ways. But that's just the magic of the universe. But that list option, that list opportunity is, I think, golden. It's the decision
list.
Yeah, I kept that list. It was 4 pieces of legal paper that I had literally just written it down, and literally down to the point of this is how it feels when you walk through the, when you walk into the house. This is what it feels like when you walk out into the yard. No neighbors look into your yard. I see mountains. I literally just detailed it and then gave it away because I didn't even know where for sure I was going to look. Literally, it appeared. I got all of it, except it wasn't a Mediterranean house. Okay, big deal.
Same. Like, we had literally 2 weeks after, because it was my husband, myself, and my mom who was moving with us, because we were wrapping, like, my dad passed away and she had her mom. It was 2021 was a very tragic year. We lost my Nana, her mom, and her sister, and my dad within 1 year.
Wow.
It was hard. And that's what caused us to come back from Australia. We got stuck there during COVID. We were those Americans who got stuck abroad.
Wow.
And That was what turned me on to podcasting. That was what skyrocketed this whole second arm of our business, which then eventually turned into its own business, which is Communication Queens. But we moved back from Australia to support my mom. And my mom, my husband and I, we all sat down and we said, okay, the plan was always to move to Texas. And we said, okay, here's the list of everything that we want for our home together. And we sat down and we made that list. A week later, our house went on the market. And we had no idea. We didn't find it for another four or five months. But like a week later, it had been on the market and no one had bought it up until we put in the offer.
Here's how it works. The universe really does support you. And the magic is if you're paying attention, because the joy is really in seeing how it came to you, how all of the constituents out there, all of the magical weaving, the weavers out there, how it comes to you. If you negate the magic, you're really missing the boat here, because it's so fun. It's like serendipity. If you believe in serendipity and that there are no coincidences.
And it's just about being very crystal clear on what it is that you want. And most people really suck at that, actually.
They do.
Because we know what we don't want and we get focused on that.
Yeah,
oh, I don't want this again. And no, I don't want this again. If you keep telling, your unconscious mind is like a toddler. Have you ever told I have one, and if every time I say don't do this, I always watch myself. I try not to say don't do this, because as soon as I say don't do, that's exactly what he's doing. But because the unconscious mind, it doesn't process negatives. So you have to be very clear on, say it the way that you want it. And I'm a few years into having kids, but it's still a practice, because don't throw the ball inside the house. I'm like, how do I reframe that and say, please throw the ball outside?
Please throw the ball outside.
Yeah. It takes a minute though to really
experience.
Think
about, well, where would like I you'll live.
Yeah.
No, this is such a good subject. It's one of my favorites. I love the traction has gotten overused so much, but the truth is it exists. And I always think of the subconscious. A lot of people will put it in the negative category, but I don't. I actually embrace the subconscious, because really its job is to protect you, in my vernacular. I feel like, look, if I burnt my hand on the stove when I was a kid, my subconscious registered that and said, let's protect you. Let's never let you near the stove again. Or let's make sure it doesn't happen to you. It looks out for you. So it negates a lot of things so that you can avoid them and do other things. But sometimes you're meant to do those things differently. You're meant to go after something. You're meant to conquer a fear. Think of all, you and I are in the business of public speaking. That's the biggest fear outside of dying. Sometimes for some people, it's worse than that. They choose to die. But the truth is, something happened to them when the spotlight got turned on for them, onto them, that they were so uncomfortable that it scared them the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, should they avoid it forever? No, it's now the thing you must conquer. You must conquer that fear, and then your life changes.
Yeah, I had selective mutism in kindergarten. I didn't speak for 6 months. My teacher actually thought that she wanted to get me tested for like autism, because she was like, and my mom's, no, she's smart. She knows it. She just is very, I was dealing with a lot of childhood trauma that was unprocessed at that moment. That was a very tough age. Looking back, I can now see like how all the dots connected, because that was when my father's passing in 2021 gave me a lot of compassion for those who lose a parent and who don't have the resources to process grief when you lose significant relationship with a caregiver who you have a complex relationship where there was a lot of love, but also a lot of trauma. And my dad didn't have those tools. And so those were the formative years of my life, but those were also the prime years that he was drinking the most. And that was when he was most abusive. And so looking back, I just could see my kindergartner teacher's face, which like telling her I'm a public speaker now, because it took practice. I write about it in my book, Make Every Podcast Want You, about how I had to learn how to make friends. I had no friends. I stalked my best friend in kindergarten on the playground, following her around without saying words, because I was so scared to open my mouth. She's still my friend to this day.
Heartbreaking. So heartbreaking to hear.
Practice. Like it took 30 years of practice to be able to deliver a TED talk. And I was talking to a client of mine who was, she was in a speaker training, and she was like, but Kim, you did your TED talk in 3 weeks. I said, yeah. And I've been on over 200 podcasts practicing my oratory skill set. And I started out as a kid, I had a love for musical theater, and I put myself in uncomfortable positions to go for the roles where I had to open my mouth, to start practicing singing, to take those risks. And I spent years practicing for the stage. So by the time I get offered a TED talk with only a 3-week deadline to write, produce, get it done, and practice it to perform it, I felt confident in saying yes to that opportunity. But that came with 20 years of preparation.
Yes, it doesn't happen overnight. Very few people just get up and wing it. And some of those extroverted people, that's a comfort zone for them. But for most people, whether they're afraid of being on stage or they're perfectionists who never feel like it will be good enough, whatever your fear is in it, that's the thing you must do, because that is the thing that will change your game. And I love it. And your TED Talk was great, by the way. To everybody that's out there, you're going to want to hear her TED Talk. She does a fabulous job of it, and it will really resonate for you. So now talk to me about, so Communication Queens, you started that. Who else is in Communication Queens?
So Communication Queens, my husband is also one of our voice coaches. And it really is for the authors, entrepreneurs, founders who are seeking greater visibility by way of podcasting. And not by just having their own podcast, but guesting. And we started it because back in the pandemic, let's backtrack to 2020. I'm stuck abroad with my coaching business, my husband's industry. He's a voice actor. His industry completely shut down. We were over in Australia for a Comic-Con, and I joke that we were hanging out with the cast of The Walking Dead as a global pandemic was breaking out. And so we're there. We said, oh, how long could this last? We've always wanted to live abroad. My business had been virtual since 2018. I said, I can support us. We're fine if your industry shuts down. Let's go. Then we're there for 3 weeks, and then 3 weeks turns into months. And I'm like, okay, we got to figure out this lead generation, because prior to that, public speaking workshops were my primary form of lead generation for my coaching business. And those weren't happening, not only because of the rules. Now, where we lived in Australia, it opened up very fast after the lockdown. You couldn't leave the state, but other than that, we lived a very normal life for 2 years. However, because of my visa, I couldn't put on live events. I couldn't put on paid workshops and things like that. So I did virtual workshops. I tested all the things. We had our own podcast since 2019, doubled down on that. I found our own podcast was great for those clients that were on the fence and wanted to get to know me a little bit more. But ultimately, where we found our secret sauce was in guesting. And where most people get podcast guesting wrong is they treat it like a one-night stand, is what I like to say, where you go on, it's thanks for the visibility, bye, and then you never talk to the person again. Versus the way we approach it is treat it like a first date. It's an open door. You're having an hour-long conversation with somebody that could be a phenomenal source of referrals. They could be a phenomenal source of connections. You never know where that next step is going to lead. And so within 50 interviews, we generated over $70,000 in new business revenue for my coaching business. Now it's over $250,000. And then we started the agency. And initially, it was a done-for-you agency where we did all the podcast end-to-end booking. Now it's a consultative agency where we set up systems so that people can just do it internally. And then we saw the same results with our clients. Our clients were getting referrals. Our clients were getting business coming to their business because they were going on podcasts. And it was because they were choosing to lean into the relationship, not into just the visibility one-night stands.
Perfect. I love that. So you're helping clients build visibility that converts. It's not just about looking good online.
Yeah, because and that's the thing is so many people want to look good online and they do all the reels and they do all the dance. And most of my clients that come to us, like they are not interested in doing the dancing on TikToks and all that, but they do love speaking and they do have a powerful message to share. And they are authors, thought leaders, entrepreneurs, founders, and they're coming out from the shadow of their business to build that personal brand. Because in this next evolution of where we're headed with AI, with the whole just shift in the global ecosystem, personal brands and what you build as a person is going to be leading the way beyond the scope of what your businesses do. And your brand is what follows you and what precedes you in the rooms that you have yet to walk in. So being very conscious and aware of letting your brand walk into those rooms before you. That's how we get most of our clients, is through podcast interviews and through referrals.
I love that. There are many that think podcasting is not as important as it is. They think, oh, there's millions and millions of podcasters and you're lost. You're lost in the sea of podcasting guests, but it's leveraging that opportunity both ways, whether you're a host or whether you're a guest. And it takes both people. This is a conversation. This is a relationship you're starting. You have to nurture it. I love what you have to say. And you wrote a book. I love your book, Make Every Podcast Want You, How to Be So Radically Interesting You'll Barely Keep from Interviewing Yourself. What a great name. That's so perfect. Tell me about that. Why was that message the one that you felt was so important that it needed to be in print?
I had the death tax come. That is, I lost within 2021, I lost 3 family members and 2 family friends, and moved countries and moved states. And after processing a significant amount of grief for those losses, I really sat with myself in 2024 and I said, if I died this year, what would I regret not becoming? And the number one thing was a solo published author. And I've been in a collaborative book, and that was great back in 2016. It hit bestseller, but it didn't feel like it was mine. It didn't feel like my win. And I have always wanted to be an author. I have at least 3 books in my Scrivener that are half done. And I said, I have to write this book. And the only way that I could actually make the time with 2 young children, my kids were 7, 6, and 2 at the time. The only way I could make the time was if I tied it into my business, because my business always became my best excuse to not complete the book, because I would focus on writing the book and then things with the business would take off. And so I would get to focus. I would need to focus more on client delivery and on lead generation and on sales and on all the visibility and all that. So I had to tie in the book with a longer term vision, and knowing my own mindset, I basically tricked myself into writing the book as a piece of the long-term vision and strategy for my company. And then that way I finished the book, was able to get published it. It became bestseller. It's now won multiple gold awards. It got featured in New York Times Billboard. And then one of the best parts about that was I was pregnant with my daughter, and I get to go to I went to New York in this mastermind, and I was speaking at this mastermind with literally the guy who built Layla and Alex Hormozi's personal brand. And I'm speaking on podcasting and I'm sitting there. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And my book is up there on the big Times Square billboards as one of the top books of 2024 to change your life and business. And I'm standing there, I think it was 5 months pregnant with my daughter. And I was like, it just tears of just, baby girl, this is what is possible when you put yourself and your dreams first, and you say, I'm going to go for it. You can do it. I will always back you. And that was just the message that I was like, had ingrained and seared in my bones. And so it's beautiful. Just before I hopped on this interview, she was in her bouncer and I was talking to her. I was like, we're going to go to service. We're going to start serving people. Are you ready? I obviously passed her off to grandma for this interview, but she just smiled. And it was just like, whether she understands me or not, I feel she does. But that moment of leading the way for our youth and looking at what are the dreams that you want to have as a legacy. And for me, a book is such a powerful asset to a longer legacy that my kids will get to have with me long after I'm gone.
Well, I can definitely see this as a passion project for you, and you've accomplished something that was a goal that had been backburnered along the way because always business. And I think all of us entrepreneurs completely that resonates for all of us because we're always putting everybody first. We're always putting the clients first. As mothers, we put our kids first. But sometimes you need to stop the train for a few minutes and say, I need to be in this mix too, or it's going to go by. I remember my dad and I having a conversation once. And I remember this stayed with me for so long. He said, "You never regret what you do. You only regret what you don't do." And I think that's powerful. I also, the title of your book is terrific, How to Be Radically Interesting. You'll barely keep from interviewing yourself. It makes me think one of the tenets I grew up with is this was brought home. My parents are alive and well. Let me tell you, they're way gone. They're gone, but they're still with me. And I remember my mom telling me at 8, she said, "Your job in life is to be interested and interesting. Everything else will come from that." And I thought it was a really good setup for a lifetime of exploring and connecting and being interested in what other people have to say. So I'm really thrilled that you're here. Now, you've mastered podcasting on both sides. And what mindset shift do you think someone needs to make before pitching themselves to a podcast or stepping in front of any mic?
I think just in general, as humans in our society, we need to have more reverence for the connections that we have with people.
And agree with that more. And is that's one of your like golden strategies in this book, right? That's something that people could start to apply instantly. You don't have to study that. You have to be connected. You have to be intentional.
Yeah. And it comes from pitching from an intentional place. I can't tell you, having a top 2% podcast, I get so many crappy pitches per week. And unfortunately, a lot of them come from untrained VAs, which is why we like help train in our consulting. We create the videos to train your VAs so that they can pitch you appropriately. But a lot of them, the pitches are irrelevant. If you don't even, in the book, I have the 10 commandments of the pitch. And if you don't even, number one, use my name, which is the easiest thing to find, then you immediately go in the bin. I'm sorry, I just don't have the time for someone who doesn't even have the time to reference my name. If you don't care that, if you care that little. And the other piece, I actually, in the book, I give a screenshot, blacked out, of course, of any personally identifying information, but of an example of pitches that we receive on a regular basis of here's the generic pitch, here's the golden nuggets. One of the tirades that I've been on recently is as a top 2% podcaster with over 250 episodes, I've had women empowering women. I've like, if you pitch me saying, I want to empower women, I'm like, great. How are you doing it? I like, and one, so one of the tenets that I really give on in the book is find your numerical specifics. So numbers tell a really fantastic story. They provide in language a way of chunking down from this conceptual idea of empowering women to here's a specific number of what I've done. Have like one of our clients, she has spoken and trained 5,000 women in financial awareness and in financial principles. That says I'm empowering women. That doesn't like I it doesn't it's not this like overarching concept. It's a specific example that paints a picture. And our subconscious minds, to go back to the unconscious mind, they speak in pictures, they speak in internal representations. So we have to be clear as far as when you pitch. Is your pitch painting a picture of how you have served, of your life, of what makes you interesting, of those fun aspects of your story? So there's a reason why in my pitch, I say from the streets of suburbia, selling bags of glitter water. That's a very clear picture that also establishes a level of longevity because I started entrepreneurship when I was five. So it establishes a number of longevity. It paints a picture of where I started, which is the streets of suburbia. So it's not like I wasn't on the, I'm very clear that I'm a white girl from suburbia. So I am a valley girl through and through from California. So being able to paint that picture, it allows for a deeper connection. And so what are those interesting, fun aspects of your story that you can add in? So one of our clients is a huge producer in entertainment, and being able to say he went from food stamps to producing a $1 billion empire, like that's an incredible journey and a story arc. You want your pitch to be able to show a story arc and let your who you are be the embodiment of your message, not just preaching a message. And I think when we speak in too much conceptual language of I want to empower women, or I believe I'm an entrepreneur, it's like that, those are great, but how specifically? So as you look through your pitches of what you're saying, of what you're sending out to podcasts, look at how is this specifically applicable to this podcast? And now with the advent of AI, it's really easy for you to tailor your pitch so long as your AI is trained in who you are and all the various aspects of your story. So a tip that I really recommend is to take all the things that make you radically interesting, all the pieces of your story that you're comfortable sharing. I want to be clear on that because I do reference some of my clients in the book who have shared stories of sexual trauma and childhood abuse and things like that. And you do not have to have a story of that level of abuse that you need to share to go on the highly successful podcast. And if you're still processing childhood trauma, please don't. Please take that to the therapist's office. Do not take that to a podcast. But if there's certain aspects of your story that you're comfortable sharing, maybe you've skied off 52 mountains, or one of our clients has climbed 56 peaks. One of our clients built $100 million biotech company. One of our clients has nearly 200,000 members in his real estate company. So being able to list, what are those things that make you interesting? If you, one of our clients will list risk life and limb to pet a cute dog. Like those are fun facts that you can add in the big and the macro and the micro, add that all into ChatGPT and say, just please keep this as reference for any future podcast pitches, because then you can tailor your pitch based on your strategy for the podcast to ensure that you are hitting some unique aspects of your story that will incite the podcaster to listen.
This is so beneficial to our listeners. As someone that has to field through all of these pitches myself, and it's finding that thing that makes them interesting. I could not agree more. If I hear one more person say to me, I'm a transformational leader, I think I will choke. I will just choke. That's the trigger for me, is don't tell me that one more time. And I want to empower women. Way over it, way over that phrase, both of those phrases. It's not that those things aren't valuable. It's not that's what we hope for in life, is people that are empowering other people, but find a way to set yourself apart. Give me something to work with when I go out to research you, which I do to a great degree to make sure I'm prepared for my guest. But I want to know that my guest is doing some of the work too, because I'm going to make them look good. I'm actually going to give them an opportunity to talk to my audience and make a difference and create a connection. Give me something to work with here. I'm not going to make it up. I'm not going to. I love this advice. I'm hoping everybody is listening closely. So if you've got someone listening who hates traditional marketing, what would you say is the secret weapon hidden in podcast guesting?
If you don't like social media, podcast guesting is like your jam. If you prefer like in-depth, longer conversations, if you are an introvert, like naturally I'm an introvert, and you prefer to have an intimate conversation that ends up getting blasted out to hundreds, if not thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people, that makes you and positions you as an expert so you don't have to work so hard, you already have automatic social proof by going on a podcast. Those are all the reasons to go. A podcast audience. Here's just a couple stats so you're to just drive it home. And I list all of these in the first chapter of the book. So 66% of podcast listeners have a college degree and are making over $75,000 annually. So you have an audience that is highly affluent and highly educated. The only social platform that tops that, it doesn't even top it. It comes close to it, but it doesn't top it, is LinkedIn. But, and then with podcasts, 42% of millennials who are now like inheriting and becoming the greatest wealthy generation the world has ever seen. 42% report purchasing based on a podcast host recommendation. And a recommendation is not just like an advertisement for a product. A recommendation can also be, I'm referring this guest that I'm having to buy their book. I'm referring to this guest to enroll or have a call for their services because they're such a high caliber. They've delivered so much value. That is also considered a referral. So you can have public referrals where you have social proof of somebody else already saying that they want to go out and buy something. You have an established relationship, which is why I say that if you're going on as a guest, have some reverence for the fact that the greatest relationship that you are entering into is the one between the podcaster and their audience, because they have built up a relationship of trust. And it's like coming in as a babysitter. And you are going to come in and babysit this podcast, and you don't want to be the babysitter that's just like hanging out on their phone. Oh yeah, sure. I'll make sure your kids are fed and maybe okay. No, you want to be the one. If you want the job, go in and show that you give a damn.
So true. This is golden, everybody listening to this. It's absolutely true. Let me ask you, there are a lot of people out there that want to launch a podcast. They listen to them and they feel, you know what, I got something to say here. What would you say to people that want to create real transformation? I told you, I say that word sometimes.
Kelly.
I know, I can't stand it, but it is out there. And you want something that's just not another audio file out there that's filling the void. What would you tell them?
So a couple things. One, there is a reason as to why 90% of podcasts don't make it past 10 episodes. And it's because there's a lot of work involved. And I'm sure, Kelly, there's a lot of work involved. And on average, having been on over now 300 podcasts and talked to a lot of podcasters, most podcasters are spending about an hour at least to 10 hours. On average, it's about three. Preparing for the episode, vetting you for the episode, editing the episode, creating the marketing assets, deliverables for the episode. So you're not only asking for, as a guest, you're asking for 3 hours of someone's precious time that they're not going to get back, that they are giving to you for free. So that's having reverence as a guest. That being said, knowing that you may be putting in that amount of time, be very clear and specific with who you want to go in to this podcast. And what is your intention of the podcast? Is it to develop mentorship relationships that turn into friends? I have built friendships with people that have come on my podcast that I never would have had I not had a podcast.
So true.
Mentors that I never would have thought would be in my life that are now I consider my friends, that I am a text message away. Like, it is an unbelievable resource for building high quality, high caliber relationships when you don't go into the podcast and say, I'm just going to interview everybody who wants to empower women. Because you have to be discerning. And it took me a while, honestly, to be discerning as a podcaster because I had the trouble with saying no. I didn't want people to not like me. And so but then realizing, oh my gosh, there's 52 weeks in a year. And if I only have 52 episodes and I release a solo episode and an interview episode, then that is only 26 slots available for me to build a relationship with people, which is why I prefer guesting anyways, because you can go out and build, instead of 26 people, you can go out on as many interviews as you want. However, recognize that you have about 26 slots to fill if you want to have a standard episodic podcast, which is what most people think of when they think of having a podcast. That being said, look at your time and look at the commitment. In the first chapter of my book, I say having a podcast is like having a baby. And if you're in a relationship with your business, which is what my Forbes article was on, which is, are you in an it's complicated relationship with your business? When you're in an it's complicated relationship with your business, and maybe it's not having the cash flow that you want, or it's not producing the revenue that you want, the worst thing to do in any relationship when you're in an it's complicated is be like, what's going to fix this? A baby. And that's what most people...
The favorite moment of the show. That is... Absolutely golden. Maybe.
So the podcast is like a baby. So if you're in a healthy cash flow revenue, you've got your revenue stream locked in place, you're good with that. Go for it. Launch the podcast. If you're not there yet, maybe consider launching a selected podcast as your freebie for when you go on to other people's podcasts. And what I mean is you can do a short, like a Netflix series, like a one series Netflix series of 5 to 10 episodes of your best content that allows you to do your podcast. Maybe this allows you to have 1 to 2 top high quality interviews with people that you would just like love to be in touch with and have a conversation with. It gives you that positioning authority to be able to say, we're launching this podcast. This is like it's a limited series podcast. And then you only do 5 to 10 episodes. And then you leave that on your podcast host distributor for $5 a month. That can be like with Libsyn. And you leave that on available, but then that's the freebie that you give at the end, because podcast listeners do listen to podcasts, and auditory medium to an auditory medium. And then you don't have to continuously also be in production. So you treat the podcast like a project, not like you're suddenly birthing a baby and then you got to take care of it until it's 18.
It's a brilliant strategy and a good place to start, because honestly, it's more work than you think it will be. I think we can vouch for that.
Yes, it is.
A lot more time and energy. It's not impossible to do at all. And if you enjoy it, it's a great idea what you set up, because you need to try this out before you walk into, oh, I'm now going to do this and I'm going to launch this show and I'm going to spend all this money promoting it. See if you actually like it. We obviously stayed in the game because we really enjoy this platform. I love it because it's an intimate platform. And like you, I could not agree more that the relationships created here, they last. My guests, I think the world of. I take good care of them and I really try to position them well. And I want them really to get what they do to change the world. I want them to get it out there. But it creates a great intimacy. If you like that, terrific. I love being a host more than I like being a guest. I like being a host. I really do. But it's a lot more work. I will say that.
It is a lot more work. And I think recognizing where your capacity is as a business owner is a necessary skill set, depending upon where your life and business is at this time. I've taken breaks with my podcast transparently because it was just a lot. Like when we moved, I took a 6-month hiatus off of my podcast. My downloads dropped considerably. However, like I don't do it just for the downloads. I do it for the relationships and the positioning that it provides me.
So let's say that we've got some people out there that really want to launch their podcast. They really feel like this is a calling for them, or they want to give this a try. I love it when that just went right out of my head. I just love that. That this is perfect. We were talking about this before. She was talking about baby brain. And I told her, she goes, this will pass soon. I go, it will. And then it'll come right back again at some point in the future. And you'll go, wait, what was that thought? It escaped me. That's terrible. Anyway, I want to go back to if people are wanting to do this, what can they look at rationally that besides creating new clients for yourself, such as you're a coach, and this will generate more clients for you, definitely. Definitely works for that. But I think that a lot of people are under the impression that if I start a podcast, I can expect thousands and thousands of dollars to come through the door, and I might be the next Joe Rogan making millions and millions of dollars. What's the likelihood of that, Kimberly?
I'll tell you in a story. So,
perfect. That was so good.
Back in 2021, I was coaching a podcaster, and she had a really beautifully produced podcast. She had 2 assistants working with her, and she really was looking at turning it into a platform for growth. However, she didn't look at her download numbers. And I'm like I'm the business coach that also does look at data. And I said, let's look at what's going on. And she'd been producing her podcast consistently for 2 years. She looked at her data and she had about 50 downloads per episode. Now, looking at that, if you hosted a weekly workshop and 50 people showed up consistently, damn, that packs a room. However, her expectation did not match the reality. And so we had to look at the mindset of not only expectation, but also what she was doing for the marketing, and also what she was doing for the target audience, and also what she was doing for the branding. And this was 2 years into it. So being clear with your expectation, a podcast doesn't grow to a top podcast overnight. It takes time. Now, there are tricks, tips, and strategies. Like, definitely, I highly recommend leveraging Pinterest, leveraging LinkedIn newsletters, really leaning in and leveraging high quality guests, which, I mean, also making sure that they are contractually obligated within their media release to promote the episode. And that's something I didn't have in my contracts initially when I had a media release. Most podcasts don't even have a media release. I will say that. Please get one. It is a media outlet. You do need one. I say this as a business coach. So having that media release to use somebody else's voice and likeness, and having them be contractually obligated to say, you will promote this episode to your audience, because otherwise, what's the point? Like, otherwise you're putting in 3 hours and there's no reciprocity. And I think that's something very key to recognize when you're going as a guest on shows, and when you have your own show, is to build relationships with where there is a relationship of reciprocity and you're not building with takers. There's a lot of takers out there who will take the visibility opportunity. They will take the audience and they'll get to show up and ta-da, and there it is. But ultimately, that's, for me, that's not how I want a business to feel. And I assume for your audience as well, Kelly, because you and I like attracts like. So being clear and intentional with who you're inviting on to the show, making sure that they promote it, making sure that there's someone of integrity who will abide by their word when they share it. And then building from a place of strategy of looking at, how do I want to grow this? How do I want? So IMDb is a really highly underutilized tool that most people don't use for growing their podcast, because IMDb is owned by Amazon. I know IMDb because I come from the film world. And typically you think of IMDb as, oh, that's where I look up movies. That's where you look up all entertainment. And so podcasts listed there can actually have a higher ranking, and they can actually get into the Google sidebar search engine because they're on IMDb.
How do they get listed on that? Do you have to pay to get listed?
No. You just enter it. You enter in your podcast and you enter in who you are as a media person. It just takes some time.
Brilliant. I'm telling you, you've given so much valuable information today. And the truth is, this is not for sissies. This is a real commitment if you're going to go out and do it. I think anything worth doing is worth doing well, but it takes time. So there's no fast growth. There's no fast, unless it's a completely unusual podcast, or you're going to have Tom Cruise on your first podcast. It's a building process, and you want it to work with things that are going to be revenue producing for you. And I just think you've done a great job. I think this book is invaluable to people that want to get into this business. I think it's incredible. So listen, you've done a lot of things. It's amazing. If you could go back in time and maybe whisper into the ear of yourself, maybe 20 years ago, what would you say?
Be kinder to yourself.
Ooh, that's really good. We all need to do that. That's beautiful. Tell me something that you're really proud of.
Oh, my kids. My hands down, my kids, my family, what we've been able to build and create together, and how we have really navigated to working as a team. And like, they are the board of my business to be able to just really be that entrepreneurial example, and then see it, third generation entrepreneurs already starting, because I do believe that, like, I am such an advocate that what you are building with your business, it's not just for you. And it's whether you have kids or not, like, you are shaping the minds for the next generation. And even if you don't have children, my kids are going to be in that generation that you're shaping. And so I think as it is a responsibility for conscious leaders to get their message out there, to share their story, and to shed the shame that can be associated with some experiences, and to let people know that their failure is a gift. Mistakes are a gift, and ease that path. Man, I, like, both you and I, Kelly, have shared about how we were recovering perfectionists. And I think knowing that if I had just heeded my mother's advice, which was to be kind to myself. Initially, that advice was really for my body, but it turns into for my business, for my relationship with money, for my relationship with relationships, like just to be kinder to yourself and to recognize that transformation takes time and things can change fast. And like, I look back and like, oh my gosh, 8 years ago, I was $40,000 in debt with a brand new baby and a business that had only made $100 a year before to like where we are now. It's extraordinary, but it took 8 years. And I love that quote by Tony Robbins of most people overestimate what they can accomplish in a year, but underestimate what they can accomplish in a decade. And truly, when you set your sights on thinking decade worthy instead of just in the next 90 days. And I think that's the problem with a lot of the internet now is we see these quick wins. We see 100,000 subscribers in my first day on YouTube and like all of these. And I'm like, that's not the norm. And also, you don't know necessarily to get spiritual. You don't know their karma. Like you don't know if maybe they're not meant to even sustain that. Cause for some people, that's the lottery. And I have worked with a lot of high level, high powered business owners who behind the curtains, you may be having like multiple millions of dollars a year coming in, but you're spending multiple millions of dollars a year. So you ain't taking anything home. So being able to recognize that what you see online with somebody is 20% of the picture. And in your own business and in your own world is 100% of the picture. You're seeing all your failures. You're seeing all your mistakes. You're seeing all the struggles. So when you compare yourself to somebody 20%, that's actually not a fair comparison. So
you need to own this. You want to own all of what you just described. The failures, the time it takes to get there is what makes it valuable. Your reference to lottery winners is terrific because most lottery winners, percentage-wise, lose it all in a very short period of time. People that get it too fast, the price they pay for it is they don't appreciate it. And then they're sure to lose it again. They're sure to lose it. When it takes time for you to build it, when you took some falls along the way and you recovered yourself, that's where the pride comes in. That's where the real ownership of what you create comes in. Is that you know where all the bodies are buried. You know how hard it was to get there. Anything that can happen that fast, it's like we can go back to love affairs. Love affairs that burn hot and fast, they don't last and they're good for a memory, but they won't take you through a lifetime and you don't want to raise kids with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the slow burn that really is the one that gives you all the juice, is the one that gives you, whether it's a career or a relationship, a friendship. I mean, I don't think fast is good.
Yeah. Yeah. Our egos love quick wins and our egos will always sacrifice long-term vision for the quick win. That's for the familiar and what keeps us in control versus our higher self or higher consciousness will always go for the long-term vision because it knows what's on the end. But sometimes what we perceive to be like, oh, that's so long. Like I didn't realize when we were manifesting our house that it was 4 months down the road. I thought, oh no, this is going to take a year. No, universe sped up that timeline like quite quick. And it can be really clear on what you want. And you're also clear on you honor the action steps that are required. And I think sometimes we let fear, doubt, shame, guilt get in the way of taking those action steps that are necessary to actually create that progress. And when we have those moments where fear, doubt, shame, and guilt get in the way, then the universe goes, oh, she's not ready for it. That's okay. We'll try it again later. But if you can proceed with courage and faith, and that's why like on my bracelet that my husband gave me for my 1 year anniversary, like that it says courage and faith on it. And I had that engraved and it was so beautiful and meaningful. And I had no idea how much those words actually meant to me as I've progressed and grown. Every day I look at, okay, how can I do something that is courageous? How can I make this fun? How can I do something that's hard? I even have a KPI now that's who can I disappoint? Who can I say no to?
That's progress. That's absolutely progress. Especially for the pleasers out there. That's huge. That tells you you're getting there. Kimberly, thank you so much. Not only did we all get an incredible amount of knowledge here and experience here, but we got to have that wonderful combination with wisdom, the kind that survives, the kind that takes you to the next level. And I think that you have gotten so much hard-won experience. Those are the people I want to listen to. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me and for sharing your audience with me. It's truly been an honor, and I'm really excited to see where this relationship goes.
I know. I'm already excited. I'm already thinking about the next episode. You have to come back again, please. Would you consider coming back again?
I would love that. Thank you.
You gave us so much, and there are so many good key takeaways from this. Storytelling. You guys, it's not a branding exercise. It's how we connect and trust and ultimately buy. So don't forget that. And visibility, it doesn't mean anything without alignment. So if you've got your energy and your message and your strategy lined up, that's when the magic happens. And we got to talk a lot today, like-minded Kimberly and I, really about the magic. And the universe really does support you. However you reference that, it's so much fun to talk about when you finally make your list, make your decision, and watch it happen. You will be blown away. That was so fun to share that with you. Look, you don't have to be perfect. This is one I had to remember. You don't have to be perfect to be powerful. Your story as it is right now, it already has value. So if you want more of Kimberly's expertise, head over to crownyourself.com. She's right there. And her wonderful book, Make Every Podcast Want You, How to Be So Radically Interesting You'll Barely Keep From Interviewing Yourself. I love that title. You just have to pick it up. It's on Amazon. It's worth the read. If you're looking to grow your brand or your reach and your results without selling your soul, this is the book for you. And she has a great podcast, Crown Yourself. Check her out. It's a high vibe blend of conscious leadership and mindset strategy and real talk for visionary entrepreneurs who want to build something bigger for themselves and for other people. So you are, Kimberly, the definition of using your voice as a vehicle for transformation. And again, I hate that word transformation, but it's only because I'm allergic to it because it's been overused. But it does have value. So whether it's a stage or a podcast or a one-on-one conversation, which podcasts are, I love them for that. You can see public speaking. It's just about being heard. It's about creating real lasting impact. So we're going to be cheering Kimberly on. If this episode sparked something in you, please comment. Let us know. We like to hear from you. And it seriously helps us keep amplifying the voices like Kimberly's. I hope you find great value in this. We're here to show you that public speaking isn't just a business tool. It's a growth accelerator. It's a connection builder. And it's one of the most powerful assets you can develop in your career and your life. You're not just telling your story. You're rewriting someone else's belief in what's possible. So with that said, Kimberly, I adore you. I can't wait till this next conversation, let me tell you.
Same.
Come again. And to everyone else, thanks so much for being here. And as always, I look forward to our next conversation. I'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight. We hope you enjoyed this deep dive once again into the remarkable stories and insights of our incredible guests. Their experiences and hard-earned, time-tested wisdom are not just meant to inspire you, but to provide you with actionable steps to take on your own path to success. Remember, you have a story to tell, and your voice has the power to transform your business and make lasting impact. And that's what it's all about. If you found value in today's episode, let us know. And I hope you'll take a moment and subscribe to The Spotlight wherever you listen to your podcasts so you never miss a thought-provoking or idea-producing conversation. I'm Kelly O'Hara, and I can't wait to see you back here for the next episode of the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight.